Picture this. It's 1847. You are in St. Gallen, Switzerland, standing in this incredibly crowded, echoing exhibition hall.
Right. Surrounded by people, and right in front of you is a bird.
Yeah, a duck, to be specific. And it looks around, you know, his head is darting with that jittery, hyper-alert motion you see in actual waterfowl.
And then you set down a dish of oatmeal.
Exactly. The bird waddles over, plunges its beak in, gobbles up the food, and then it literally flaps its wings to settle its feathers and lets out a contented quack.
Oh, wow. I mean, it sounds incredibly lifelike.
It really was. You could even see the rhythmic breathing in its chest. But then the man who brought the bird steps forward and he opens this small brass panel on its side.
And the whole illusion just shatters.
Completely shatters. Inside, there are no lungs, no stomach, no blood. It's just this absurdly complex labyrinth of interlocking brass gears, coiled springs, and turning cylinders.
So it's a machine.
Yeah, this is the famous mechanical duck built by a man named Reichsteiner. And it was an absolute marvel of modern engineering for its time. People were just mesmerized.
But as a representation of actual biological life, it was a ludicrous failure. I mean, it was just a machine pantomiming existence.
Right. And that brings us to the core of our mission today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are acting as conceptual tutors for you, the listener.
Yes, especially if you're a beginning student in this field, we want to help you fundamentally reevaluate our most basic assumptions about how the universe works.
We're taking a fresh look at reality to answer a really profound paradox. And I think the mechanical duck perfectly captures that paradox, right?
It does. The big question is, why do the universal laws of classical science, the exact same mathematical laws that allow us to build these incredible predictable machines, why do they spectacularly fail when we try to use them to describe life?
Or history, or just the messy reality of the natural world?
Exactly. To understand this new science of complexity, we first have to understand the old rules that built that brass duck.
Right, the classical physics pioneered by guys like Isaac Newton and René Descartes. They established what our sources basically call a founding myth for modern science.
Yeah, they viewed the entire universe as a giant deterministic clock, the clockwork universe.
And in that classical framework, the core belief is that the future is entirely determined by the present.
Right. It operates on this assumption that if you know the exact starting conditions of a system, say the position and momentum of every single gear in the clock, you can perfectly predict what it will do until the end of time.
Just by using purely rational mathematical methods, it replaces the terrifying, unpredictable whims of nature with these orderly, omnipotent physical laws.
And a massive part of that clockwork model is how it treats the concept of time. In classical physics equations, time is theoretically reversible.
Wait, reversible? Like going backward?
Yeah. If you have an equation describing a pendulum swinging, you can plug in a negative number for time and the math works perfectly backward. To a classical equation, it simply doesn't matter which way time is flowing.
But that doesn't make any sense in the real world.
Exactly. The Nobel Prize-winning chemist Ilya Prigozhin spent a lot of his career pointing out that this reversibility is a false simplicity. It's just an illusion created by the math.
Because when you look at the physical universe, time clearly flows in only one direction. I mean, you can shatter a glass by pushing it off a table, but those shards are never going to spontaneously reassemble and jump back up into your hand.
Right. We call this the arrow of time. And it is driven by the second law of thermodynamics, which dictates that the universe is relentlessly moving toward entropy.
Maximum disorder.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this for a beginning student. If classical science treats the universe like a predictable clock where time can theoretically run backward, but reality is actually this messy one-way street toward disorder,
then classical physics is fundamentally ignoring the context of the universe.
It's like trying to understand a magnificent centuries-old cathedral by placing a single brick inside a vacuum chamber.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. You can measure that brick's density, its weight, its mineral composition with flawless precision, but that isolated brick will never tell you a single thing about the architect or the religious culture that built the cathedral.
Or the passage of time that weathered its walls. That analogy hits the nail on the head. Classical science relies entirely on isolation.
It takes a messy system out of the real world.
Yeah, strips away all the environmental noise and places it in a highly controlled, sterile lab setting so the math works perfectly.
But wait, I have to push back here. We can't just throw out the clockwork model. I mean, it's incredibly successful. We use Newtonian physics to calculate the orbital mechanics that put human beings on the moon.
Down to the fraction of a second.
Right. So why are we talking about the failure of a model that clearly works so well?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, we certainly don't throw it out. We just have to be radically honest about its strict limitations. Classical science works brilliantly for simple linear systems where you actually can isolate the variables, like the vacuum of space between the Earth and the Moon.
Sure, that makes sense.
But when you apply those same rules to a biological ecosystem or a weather pattern or a human brain, you are dealing with systems that cannot be isolated from the messy, interconnected reality of the universe.
The classical model ignores those complex interactions.
And those complex interactions are the very engines that create evolution and life.
Which brings us to a really fascinating turning point in the mid-19th century. This is where mathematicians started looking at real-world interactions and realized the clockwork universe was falling apart under its own weight.
The birth of chaos theory.
Yes. I'm looking at the notes on Pierre-François Verhulst and his logistic growth equation from the 1840s. He wanted to model how animal populations grow.
Verhulst recognized that pure exponential growth, you know, a population doubling infinitely forever, just doesn't exist in nature. Animals run out of food or they run out of space.
Right. So he wrote an equation that factored in the environment's carrying capacity. It's a beautifully simple deterministic formula.
You take the current population, multiply it by a growth rate, and factor in the remaining resources.
And the output of that calculation becomes the population for the next year. Then you feed that new number right back into the exact same equation for the following year.
It's a feedback loop. There is absolutely no random chance built into it whatsoever.
But when a biologist named Robert May started playing with this exact same feedback loop on computers in the 1970s, he noticed something deeply unsettling.
What happened?
Well, if you take that growth rate variable and you start turning it up, the system hits these points where the population numbers just fracture.
Ah, those fractures are called bifurcations. Think of it as the mathematics hitting a fork in the road.
Okay, a fork in the road.
Right. At a moderate growth rate, the population numbers eventually stabilize at one consistent number year after year. The environment finds a balance.
But if you increase the growth rate, suddenly the output splits.
Yes. The population begins bouncing predictably between two numbers, like a boom year with a high population, followed by a bust year with a low population.
And if you speed up the growth rate even more, it splits again into four repeating numbers, then 8, then 16.
The complexity just doubles and doubles in this cascading effect.
Until suddenly the pattern vanishes entirely. The population numbers look completely random, bouncing wildly all over the place.
And that right there is chaos theory. The system has hit chaotic, unpredictable behavior. But remember, the underlying equation generating this wild data hasn't changed at all.
It is still perfectly deterministic.
Exactly. To visualize what is physically happening to the system, imagine taking a marble and dropping into a large, smooth ceramic bowl.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Gravity pulls the marble down, it rolls around the sides, and eventually it settles at the lowest point in the exact center. Mathematicians call that bottom resting point an attractor.
It's the stable state where the system naturally wants to go.
Right. But as you increase the growth rate in our equation and the system goes through those bifurcations, you can imagine the physical shape of the bowl starting to warp.
Warping how?
The center bulges upward, forcing the marble to roll continuously in a circle around the base without ever stopping.
Then the bowl twists, and the circle becomes a figure eight.
And by the time the math hits true chaos, the bottom of the bowl has warped into a shape that completely defies human intuition.
It becomes an infinitely complicated, spiraling, three-dimensional groove.
Yes. The marble is still trapped inside the bowl, but as it rolls, it never crosses its own path twice, and it never settles. The system is bounded, but its behavior is infinite.
We call this a strange attractor, and I want to pause on the geometry of that strange attractor for a second because it introduces a crucial concept for our student listeners. Fractals.
Ah, yes. Fractals are essential here.
Why is it a fractal? Well, if the marble is drawing a line that never crosses itself, but it's contained inside a finite space like a bowl, that means if you zoom in on any section of those spiraling grooves, you will just find more grooves nested inside.
Infinite complexity folded into a finite space.
Right, and here's where it gets really interesting. Because of that fractal geometry and that mathematical feedback loop, you can take two different computers, say your smartphone and your laptop.
Okay.
And you have them run the exact same deterministic Verhulst equation. But eventually, they will spit out completely different realities.
Yes, because infinite precision is a mathematical fantasy. In the real physical universe, infinite precision is physically impossible.
So when those two computers run the feedback loop, one might round a decimal at the 15th place while the other rounds it at the 16th place.
And in a classical linear equation, a microscopic difference of 1/4 wouldn't matter at all. The results would stay roughly the same.
But on a strange attractor, everything is amplified.
Exactly. If you place two marbles side by side in those infinitely complex nested grooves, separated by only a fraction of a millimeter, they might follow each other for a little while.
But eventually, that microscopic difference will hit a fork in the path. One marble goes left, the other goes right.
And the feedback loop multiplies the difference over and over until the two marbles are on completely opposite sides of the bowl. We call this sensitive dependence on initial conditions.
Which most people know as the butterfly effect.
Right. Because we can never measure the starting conditions of a real-world system down to infinite decimal places, long-term predictability is physically impossible.
This completely shifts our paradigm.
Yeah.
The ultimate icon of the universe is no longer an orderly, predictable, ticking clock. It is a turbulent, churning waterfall.
A beautiful way to put it.
Okay, so let's connect the dots here. We've established that the universe acts like a turbulent waterfall governed by chaos. And we established earlier with the arrow of time that the universe is naturally trending toward entropy.
Meaning that waterfall is constantly flowing toward a messy, disordered equilibrium state.
Right. So if all of that is true, how does complex structure ever arise? How do you get an intricate weather system or a living biological cell out of a chaotic universe that constantly wants to tear things apart?
To answer that, we turn back to Ilya Prigozhin. He formulated a profound paradox to solve this exact problem. He stated, and this is key, non-equilibrium is the source of order.
On the surface, that sounds completely backward. If things are out of balance, shouldn't they be more chaotic?
It seems counterintuitive until you observe molecules in action. Think about a simple glass of water sitting quietly on a table in a room.
Okay.
It is at perfect thermodynamic equilibrium. The temperature is uniform. From a macroscopic view, it looks totally calm.
But if you could zoom into the molecular level, it's utter chaos.
Right. The water molecules are essentially sleepwalkers. They bounce around randomly, colliding and ignoring one another. There's absolutely no larger structure or cooperation.
But if you take that system and push it far away from equilibrium, say, by putting a pan of water on a hot stove, or in a larger natural sense, by pumping massive amounts of solar radiation into the Earth's atmosphere.
Those sleepwalking molecules suddenly wake up.
They do. When an environment is pushed far from equilibrium, the sheer volume of energy flowing through the system forces the molecules to start communicating.
They begin to move together in synchronized patterns. In the boiling water, you get organized convection cells.
And in the atmosphere, billions of independent air and water molecules self-organize into massive, highly coherent structures. They become a tornado.
Exactly. So a tornado is a self-organizing structure born out of chaos.
And a biological cell is also a self-organizing structure born out of chaos. Functionally, they're both just collections of molecules organizing themselves to deal with a massive storm of energy.
Right.
So what is the actual fundamental difference between a hurricane and a living organism?
Well, what's fascinating here is how they interact with that thermodynamic disequilibrium. A tornado is essentially passive. It is a dissipative structure.
Meaning what exactly?
Its entire structural existence relies on the storm around it. As the tornado spins, it churns through the energy, dissipating the heat and pressure until the disequilibrium is exhausted.
And when the energy is gone, the tornado simply dies. It fades back into the random sleepwalking of equilibrium.
Right. It just spins itself out of existence because it has no ultimate goal. Whereas living systems operate with a completely different imperative.
They do not passively wait for energy to hit them.
No. They actively seek out thermodynamic disequilibrium. A living cell hunts for nutrients. An animal migrates to find warmth or food.
They constantly actively fight the return to equilibrium. Because for any biological organism, thermodynamic equilibrium literally means death.
And the only way they can actively hunt for energy and fight off entropy is through information.
Right. A tornado doesn't have a memory. It doesn't have a blueprint.
But a biological cell has DNA. It has an internal informational model of itself that it uses to actively manipulate its environment to ensure its own survival.
Which presents us with the next massive conceptual hurdle.
Oh, definitely.
If life requires complex information and structure to navigate the chaotic waterfall of the universe, how does it maintain that structure? How do you keep a blueprint intact when everything around it is swirling toward disorder?
You do it by building walls.
We're talking about boundaries.
We are. And for our student listeners, this is formalized as the principle of systematic exclusion, or PSE.
PSE. Okay, break that down for us.
The core idea is that any coherent system, whether it's the membrane of a biological cell, the rules of a human language, or the framework of a scientific theory, only achieves its structure by drawing a strict boundary.
And systematically excluding a vast ocean of other possibilities.
Exactly. Without exclusion, you cannot have structure. You just have undifferentiated chaotic energy.
To bring this into our daily reality, I want you to imagine your morning commute. Let's say you take a commuter train to work every single day.
Okay.
You sit by the window, sipping your coffee, watching the world go by. As the train hurtles down the tracks, it approaches various road crossings.
Right.
Now, because you are physically on the moving train, the warning systems trigger, and the crossing gates are always in the lowered closed position as you speed past.
That makes sense.
So from your perspective inside the train, you have never in your life seen an open crossing gate.
So acting as a perfectly rational, empirical scientist, you observe your data and you build a logical theory. Your theory states, crossing gates exist in a permanently horizontal closed position.
And your internal logic is flawless based on your observations.
But your theory is entirely based on an illusion. It relies on the systematic exclusion of the moments before and after the train arrives.
You have built what our sources call a holoscript.
A holoscript.
Yeah. A holoscript is the term for an entire enclosed system of human logic, language, and scientific models. Our human holoscript operates just like the perspective from that train window.
It feels complete and objective to us, but it only functions because our specific perspective naturally excludes massive chunks of the surrounding reality.
Language itself is a perfect example of a holoscript, isn't it?
It is. The words we use are essentially geometric grids we force onto a messy, continuous universe. When we use the word tree, we draw a conceptual boundary.
We separate the bark and the leaves from the soil it grows in and the air it breathes.
Right. But physically, there's a continuous exchange of matter and energy between the tree, the dirt, and the atmosphere. The boundary doesn't physically exist. We invent it to make the universe manageable.
This introduces a concept that I found absolutely haunting in the reading, Darwin's dragons.
Oh, that's a powerful one.
Yeah. In the physical reality of evolution, for every single species that successfully adapts and survives, there is a massive invisible negative space of species that failed, mutations that were lethal, and evolutionary branches that were never explored.
And those ghosts are Darwin's dragons.
Right. And that same negative space exists in our holoscript.
Every scientific paradigm or logical system we create survives purely by ignoring the data that doesn't fit the model, or by literally excluding the thoughts that our language does not give us the vocabulary to think.
So what does this all actually mean for us? Are we concluding that human science, logic, and mathematics are just an artificial world we invented inside our heads while riding the train?
And not the actual objective reality of the universe.
Yes.
Yes. That is the fundamental realization of complexity theory. Right. The map is not the territory. Reality is the pure, raw, undifferentiated energy of the universe.
Our world, our holoscript, is just a tool.
Exactly. It is a system of categories and boundaries we overlay onto reality. The danger isn't that we use the grid. The danger is when we forget that the grid is just something we invented.
Which leads directly to the disaster. When we forget that our logic is just an artificial map, and we try to aggressively force it onto the raw physical reality of the universe, we commit something called level transgression.
Level transgression occurs when we take a symbol or a rule from a high conceptual level, like abstract economic mathematics or rigid human logic, and we violently force it down onto a lower, complex, physical level.
Like an intricate ecosystem or our own biological bodies. You see this in everyday life all the time. Think about the concept of a daily schedule.
Right. A schedule is an abstract, high-level grid we invent to organize time.
But if you force that grid onto your physical body, if you ignore your genuine biological exhaustion, your hunger, or your stress, simply because the schedule says you must work for 2 more hours, you commit level transgression.
You damage the complex physical system to serve the abstract rule.
And the best fable to illustrate the ultimate consequence of this is the riddle of Matthias the rooster.
I love this example. Matthias lives on a farm next to a busy, high-speed road. For years, every time a massive truck comes barreling toward him, his lower-level physical instincts kick in.
His adrenaline spikes, his muscles contract, and he frantically jumps out of the way.
And he survives time and time again.
But Matthias is a reflective rooster. He has evolved a higher-level memory. One day, he thinks back on his life and realizes, you know, every single time a truck has come toward me in the past, I have emerged perfectly safe.
Therefore, the logical abstract rule of the universe is trucks are completely safe.
His internal logic, entirely contained within his own holoscript, is mathematically consistent. So the very next day, a truck comes hurtling down the road. Matthias applies his high-level abstract rule. He decides he doesn't need to jump.
And Matthias is immediately flattened. He committed a fatal category error. Matthias remembered the abstract symbol of his safety, but his logic systematically excluded the physical context that created the safety in the first place.
Which was the exhausting physical act of jumping out of the way.
Exactly. He decoupled his logic from its ecological reality.
And if we scale that up, it looks terrifyingly like modern human society. We use our incredible accumulated human memory to store abstract strategies that were highly successful in the past.
But then we apply them to entirely new contexts where they no longer physically belong.
Right. We take the abstract mathematical concept of unlimited compounding growth that worked so well during the expansion of the Industrial Revolution, and we relentlessly force it onto the finite, physically limited reality of our planet's biosphere today.
We are forcing a mathematical map onto a biological territory, and the territory will always win. The biosphere doesn't care about our economic holoscripts.
This is why, if we want to survive as a complex system, we have to learn the difficult art of actively pruning our mental garden.
Yes. Human beings naturally hoard concepts, rules, and logic that worked in the past. We treat them as permanent truths.
It feels like we invent these conceptual tools to solve a problem, but then we become so obsessed with the tool that we forget it's just an object we made.
Like what?
Like if you use a wooden ladder to climb up onto the roof of your house.
Yeah.
You don't keep dragging the heavy ladder around with you once you're walking around on the shingles. You leave it behind.
The philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein used that exact metaphor. He argued that our logic, our language, and our scientific models are simply ladders.
You use a specific scientific model to climb up to a higher level of understanding.
But once you reach that new vantage point, you have to realize the ladder was just a temporary framework. To truly understand reality, you have to throw the ladder away rather than mistaking the ladder for the destination itself.
Because if you cling to the ladder, if you stubbornly cling to the old holoscript when the environment has changed, you end up exactly like Matthias.
Flattened by a truck you thought was safe.
Exactly. Let's take a breath and look back at the journey we've just been on. We started by looking at Reichsteiner's mechanical duck, the ultimate symbol of the classical, predictable clockwork universe, where everything is deterministic and time supposedly flows both ways.
Then we watched that orderly clockwork shatter. Through the logistic growth equation and the strange attractor, we saw how simple deterministic math breeds infinite fractal chaos, turning the universe into an unpredictable waterfall.
We explored how life emerges from that chaotic waterfall through self-organization, actively fighting off the heat death of entropy by riding the waves of thermodynamic disequilibrium.
And finally, we arrived at the sobering reality of the principle of systematic exclusion. We recognize that our very ability to think, to speak, and to do science relies on a holoscript.
A closed system that only survives by drawing boundaries and excluding the infinite messy reality buzzing outside the window of our train.
It's a lot to take in, especially if this is your first deep dive into complexity theory.
It really is.
Right.
Which leaves us with a final massive question to mull over as we wrap up. If human language, rigid logic, and even our most trusted scientific models inherently survive by excluding vast parts of reality to maintain their own artificial structure,
right,
what massive world-altering Darwin's dragon is our modern society completely blind to right now, simply because our current vocabulary doesn't even allow us to see it? Are we spending all our time admiring the mechanical duck, completely unaware of the living, breathing world standing right behind it?